are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Oh, good. So this is our first day back. You're a virgin on our show again.
Oh, beautiful.
How does that make you feel?
A lot younger.
Hey, how long have we known each other?
God, over 30 years, I think.
Holy shit. You know, that's a milestone in a lot of ways for me. You know, you've outlasted my first marriage with me.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
80s, yeah. I mean, it's 1980s, I think.
Yeah, okay. Our company over here in 82, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
You were there from the beginning.
Yes.
How do we meet? I forgot already. Don't tell me you don't know. You don't know. I made that impression on you.
Well, it wasn't a coffee shop.
I don't think so. I don't think those were going on back. I mean, I think yeah. I know what you're talking about. No.
Wasn't it in Venice?
I have no idea, man. I really can't
remember.
See, that's how old we are and how long we've been together. Can't remember shit.
Was that 1900s or 1800s?
I don't I can't tell. I mean, you look 38, so I know you're confusing the shit out of me because you say you're 38 and I believe you.
Well, I thought you were 37, right?
I don't know. I got to ask somebody because I don't know.
I was 37 for the last 30 years, though, so I thought I'd go to 38.
Really good. That's the way to own up to your age.
That's right, yeah.
Hey, listen, Tom, welcome to Serious Growth Podcast. And listen, our mission here today is to hopefully tell a version of the truth or all of the truth. That's the whole game plan here.
Okay, great.
And, you know, listen, I've known you for a long time, and you've got an amazing background. I've heard a lot of your stories. I'm always fascinated by them. You know, I retell them to other people because they're just so interesting. And the one that I'm citing right now was we were in a car together not too long ago. So when I was down there seeing Billy, and I was running around in your car, and you told me about, because you've been in special forces, and I want to talk about all that. But the story that I'm citing right now is when you told me that you feel more relaxed when you have bullets that are flying past your head than you do, you know, just in a normal, just being in a normal environment. And it's
right.
I found that so interesting. And if I didn't know you as well as I did, I'd say you're full of shit. I don't believe you, but I do truly believe what you're saying. And that goes to the kind of training that you had, obviously, you know?
Right.
And so let me start out by saying and asking you, when did you get involved in the military?
1970.
So did you just decide to like to join, or how did you decide to
get involved? I was I just graduated kind of I went to high school, and then I went to college a couple of years, and I was married the first time, but I was already a black belt. I started training probably about 1966, and I got my black belt about 69-70 after 3 years. And so I didn't want to go because I was married, of course. So I tried to figure out ways to get out of it. There's no way to get out of it. But I figured that's a time, still tons of troops were going to Vietnam, right?
Yeah.
Late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
And I figured, God, if I'm going to go to Vietnam, I want to be as well trained as possible. So the only thing I could think of is I kept hearing about elite forces, like Special Forces, Green Berets are the top and the most training. But the only problem, you go through about a year and a half of training, and the draft was 2 years that time, and I couldn't, I'd only have 6 months for them to use. So to get Special Forces, I had to sign up an extra year.
Okay.
But I figured, God, with that extra training, and you know, I thought for sure it's just going right straight to NAM, and but that extra training could help keep me alive. You know, that extra insight and tips and experience and everything, and training and having a top level guys have your back that way.
Yeah.
So that was a decision. I just signed up for extra year, and
so you didn't have any family members or anybody like that that influenced you to go that direction?
No, I was married with my first wife at that time.
Yeah.
And that's why I didn't want to go. Of course, that created a divorce, you know.
Yeah. So what made you get into martial arts to begin with?
You know, when I was young, I just heard about all these mystical things that martial artists could do, supposedly do. And, you know, and I was hanging around like biker clubs and a couple car clubs. And of course, you know, when you're young, immature, you just want to be tough, want to be able to defend yourself.
Yeah.
So I can't say it was really high level stuff. I was interested in the mystical things like chi and ki and internal energy. But the main reason I just wanted to learn how to fight and defend myself because of clubs I was hanging around.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, because the when you get into martial arts like you did, because I've heard different things. I never got into it. I mean, I trained with one of my trainers a little bit, and I can't even tell you. It might have been Muay Thai, I think, that he helped me out with it. I was just curious about it. But when you learn a certain art like that, is it really useful when you go out in the real world? I mean, are you too mechanical, and are you able to modify on the fly? You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you're trained like that, and all of a sudden you get punched in the mouth, you know, can you utilize that, or how does that work actually?
You know, it depends on the style and more the instructor that you train with. You know, like a weight training, you get a better quality instructor who you get more efficient, faster results from. So much karate and martial arts out there isn't very effective, you know. From the traditional dojo, a lot of them are like babysitting their kids and just to go through and have all these color belts of the rainbow to keep them motivated and to charge more money.
Yeah.
Luckily, I was attracted to a old ancient Shotokan Japanese style that was very realistic and very realistic to a real situation. And, you know, you end up reacting to a real situation where you practice, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you practice very realistic against real live punches, straight punches, hook punches, everything, all that stuff like boxers, kickboxers, Thai boxers, yeah, then you're going to be more effective. But a lot of systems are very compartmentalized, very conservative, and very boxy. Yeah. And you have to get to those realistic levels, you know?
Yeah. You know, when I watch some of this stuff on television, again, I know television is more choreograph, but
yes,
some of that stuff just looks too mechanical in a way. It makes me wonder, I mean, how functional is that really in real world? But I wanted to ask you this. Once you learned your art and became a black belt, do you remember the first fight that you got into or altercation that you actually had to use what you learned?
Yes. I mean, well, first to go back to the movies things, in the old days, as you know, 70s, 80s, you know, even 90s, the fight scenes were terrible, very boxy. But now they're getting top level, better guys, you know, a lot of UFC guys realistically, and choreographing fight scenes, which I did a lot myself. So they're a lot better. Of course, special effects, speeding up the film and doing how they do different cuts and everything really makes the fight more realistic. And nowadays in films, they're much more realistic and effective than the old days, you know.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
His old days was just terrible.
Yeah.
And then you get the Chinese movies, a fight scene would last like 45 minutes. You know, you know, you get bored, fall asleep.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, doing it and stuff. But it's then...
How much punishment can you really take? I mean, can you really fight for 45 minutes? I don't think so.
Yeah.
You're fighting for 45 minutes, you're not in a good style, right?
No.
It's got to end quicker than that, I hope.
Well, look at like UFC... For championship rounds are five-minute rounds,
yeah.
You know? So that's 25 minutes. And normal runs are like 3 5-minute rounds. I mean, boxing, you know, like 3-minute rounds. In the old days, you know, they do 50, 60, 70 rounds in the old days. You know, it's different than
Is that
nowadays.
Like the bare knuckle fights? Is that when that was going?
Yeah, you know. Well, back before Jack Dempsey, I mean, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 rounds they would go. Just
amazing.
Incredible.
And fighting bare knuckle. I mean,
yeah, some, you know, just a little wrap around.
Yeah.
They didn't have really good gloves at all then. They didn't even know what gloves were, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy.
But, you know, it's back to your other second question. Yeah, the first time I got an altercation, God, I was so amped up because, you know, this is a real fight, but it lasted just a couple seconds and I ended up being like overwhelming for the opponent because it was so effective.
All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? good, because you're gonna get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief and the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
I'm sure you're gonna. For me, you know, I bounced. I got into bouncing because I wanted to find out if I could fight. I never had to as an athlete.
Yeah.
Nobody bothered me, you know. But that was always in the back of my head. So yeah. I got out and got a bouncing job, and I don't know how to fight. I never learned how to fight. I just thought, well, I'm gonna learn the hard way.
Yeah.
You know, fear is gonna drive me because it scared the shit out of me to think that I'm gonna be getting in a fight with somebody. So was it traumatic for you the first time, and what was that? How did it happen, and how did it go down?
Oh well, you know, it was just like in high school, and just had an altercation with a guy, and then so I just met him after school, and he had his buddies, I had my buddies, we went to the park, and he's jumping around boxing, you know, and I just jumped in and took a step and went right over his fist guarding and hit him in the head the first time, and I hit him with a hook and a couple punches, and it was over. That's so it. Fast.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Did everybody else run when they saw that?
No, I wish they would have. I wish they would have been that scary. But, you know, what's interesting, if you have a bunch of guys, say even four or five guys, and you take out the first guy really quick.
Yeah.
I mean, the second guy say, whoa, what was that?
Yeah.
They're gone.
Yeah. It sends a message. That's for sure.
Yes. But if it lasts a long time, you know, they're going to be more confident and jump
right.
in.
Exactly. Okay, so you get this training under your belt, so to speak, and then you take this into the military. Did your training in black, getting your black belt and all that, did that actually help you or hurt you, or, you know, going into the military?
Tremendous asset, because, you know, like in weight training and stuff, which you've done for your whole life, you know, our worst opponent is ourself, right?
Yeah,
you know, we break at our weakest link. To face yourself, face your fears, face your insecurities, weaknesses, everything. And if you can't do that, how can you face some big 6'4" guy or very tough opponent, you know?
Yeah.
You have to face yourself and become fearless and not insecure, not let any doubt in. So the best thing is that, you know, my style and my teacher, Tsutomu Oshima, who's like 89 years old, and he was just an incredibly tough fighter and came from an old Japanese school, you know, samurai mentality. We call it Budo, warrior's way. So I kept that in mind, and hearing his voice and his words all the time in the back of my mind, every time I go through training or face any fears or anything. See, we have an old saying in martial arts, if you don't want to get wet, jump in the lake.
If you don't want to get wet, jump in the lake?
Yeah.
Okay. Help me out here. I'm not... You know, I've never been that smart. I'm stupid smart, but I don't get this.
You know, in Japanese philosophy, they like to talk in these contradictions, you know. They call it like haiku, short poems, where it goes against logic. So the idea is like, say, if somebody wants to go in a pool that's very cold, they stick their toe in, they stick their foot in, and very reluctant, and it takes a long time, and you suffer more trying to get in slowly.
Yeah.
So this idea is you just jump in and
I see.
You just commit to it, like jumping in a black hole or whatever. You don't know if it's a foot deep or 100 foot deep, or just screw it. Jump in, you know?
Yeah. So it sounds to me like, and I'm assuming that when you're going to, kind of going back and forth between here and transitioning into the military with your all this training that you had for your art. But it seems to me that the training that you got in your martial arts had as much to do with mental discipline and training as it did physical. Am I correct in thinking that?
Yes, totally. Because, you know, like we have that saying, face yourself.
Yeah.
Is our worst opponent ourself. So like same thing when you're lifting, you push yourself. I mean, you push yourself against all odds, no matter what. You know, you don't want to do any injuries. But then the more doubts and fears you have and relaxing insecurities in your mind, you're going to be more apt to injure yourself. Look, when two people get in a fight, there's been guys in UFC got in a fight, and it broke their forearm or broke their jaw. They didn't even know it. Yeah. I mean, look when Ken Norton fractured Muhammad Ali's jaw. He kept fighting. You know, they didn't stop it with a broken jaw. I mean, fractured jaw.
Yeah.
And you don't even feel it because you get all those endorphins going so much. It just protects you somehow, you know?
Yeah. That can almost be dangerous because, you know, it's almost like a masking, you know, that you fight through that. And, you know, with that being said, you know, this mental aspect of what you're talking about, it's interesting to me that, again, it's my belief that as long as your faculties are all correct, one of the most powerful things in the world is thought, is your brain power.
Yes.
And yet, I would say that most people don't ever get anywhere close to tapping into that. And why do you think that is? Is it because it's so damn hard to do, or people just don't know how to do it?
I think a combination of both. And then number one, they're not motivated to do it. They don't really have a reason to do it because everybody wants an easy life. They want to, you know, get a career, get a job, make money. And, you know, it's so easy for us. We have very lazy minds to get back to reluctancy and just kick back and enjoy life instead of pushing ourselves. Because pushing yourself is painful, you know?
Yeah, that's right. You know, I talk about that with, because a lot of things that you're talking about correlate with the weight training. Weight training and bodybuilding in particular is a, you can think of it as a discipline and an art in itself, you know?
Exactly.
Because I talk about this with a lot of people that are in the fitness, in the studio that are more there for fitness. It's a different mindset. And I tell them, I said, look, to begin with, from my perspective as a bodybuilder, the motivation that you have has to be greater than the obstacle that you face.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
But it goes beyond that, in my opinion, because the motivation at some point starts waning a little bit. You have those days where you don't feel like it. And this is where the discipline trumps motivation and obstacle, in my opinion.
You're right.
Now, you have to build that discipline when, because when you're tired or when you're getting your ass kicked, you have to dig down somewhere. And I would imagine that some of that is just the discipline that you took to get yourself to a black belt. Would that be
exactly
correct?
Oh, totally. Yeah. You know, that's why in karate, we have these special trainings, which I told you about. You know, the winter ones are 3 days and summer ones 4 days. And you train, you know, probably 8 hours a day in intervals. And then we have one practice. You stand in a horse stance. You know, it's like a stance with your legs parallel and for an hour and a half. And talk about facing yourself. Your mind and body goes through all kinds of things.
Yeah.
You go, as you know, you go 1 inch lower and it's another world, another dimension.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but the just to stand is one thing. You know, people look around and get distracted, try to distract your mind, but just stand there, head and eyes straight to the front. And your mind doesn't move. No thoughts come up. There's different levels of that too,
right.
You know? And normally when we have somebody go to special training, even a younger girl or, you know, in 20s, and nobody can go unless they're 16 or more, and they push themselves, God, after they come back, and they come back, they're like a fire-eating dragon.
Yeah.
Something they tapped into some inner spirit, some inner strength they always had, but they never pushed themselves to have to tap into it.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. When in training, one of the tricks that I learned, if you will, was, you know, I know you've trained before, and this also, it has more to do with muscles burning. You're sitting in a certain stance, and I'm assuming that your muscles, your whole body just starts burning. Well, in weight training, the same thing happens.
Yes.
And what, if you're not aware of what's going on, you don't realize what's going on in your mind. In bodybuilding, when you start feeling that burn, all of a sudden you start, your mind starts panicking. It starts racing.
Yeah.
And you just want to get through that.
Yes.
And of course, the counterintuitive thing to do is to slow that process down and stay in that moment.
Right.
That's a hard thing to do. That's what you're talking about. Now, one of the tricks that I learned when I was in that moment and things were burning like fire was just simply to say, and either in my mind internally or out loud, I would say, stop. When I said stop, it broke that line of that racing feeling and that thinking that I was doing. So what kind of technique, and of course I could do more repetitions, like starting So when you're in that horse stance or when you're in a spot where you have to rely on your mind to get you through, what kind of a technique do you use to get through all that?
Okay, well, if you're high level enough, you know, and mature enough to face yourself and strong enough, you can do it yourself. But see, at special training, we have a lot of the black belts and different level black belts stand, and we have seniors, a handful of seniors that walk around and correct people's form and correct their, check their face so they're not, you know, blue like they're going to pass out or something. And just like you said, when you said stop, sometimes you just say, you know, a senior said, wake up, be strong. Yeah. What are you doing? Push yourself, you know, and slap them on the back, you know, right back here.
Right.
It hits those nerves and whoop, it shocks them, wakes them up, brings them back to reality. And it's some shock movement. And I've heard even like Tony Robbins, somebody, some woman was going hysterical about, you know, some phobia thing in front of him. And he had a little glass of water and just threw it in her face. He said, what are you doing? Stop. You know, just stop. And then she cooled off, calmed down and talked her through it. And then when I used to do a lot of parachuting, we'd have guys and a stick ready to go out the door and they're just shaking. They're paranoid. Yeah. And you got to jump out and say the same thing. Just shock their mind. Wake up, come back to it. You're going to be okay. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Get your mind out of that. You
it
know?
Breaks. It breaks that circuit.
Yes. Right. Yes, okay. Exactly.
Because it was really fascinating. You know, you think when you tell somebody that, and that, you know, they think, oh, you got to be joking. You know, just simply saying stop, that actually helps, and it actually does. It does. You know, and
it really does.
And to harness that energy in your mind is so tricky. Do you think that it starts in the mind, Tom? As far as does it start in the mind, and the mind influences the rest of your body, or you know, I know your body and your mind work. There's a mind and muscle link up. I understand that. But if you were to, you know, if you were to pick one, the body over the mind or vice versa, what would you say?
Mind.
Mind. Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, for example, like it's what you have to work with in your mind and your subconscious mind. How have you been programmed your whole life first? You know, a lot of people, young people, be very spoiled, this and that. But if you've really suffered, faced yourself, you know, we never really grow unless we face some crisis, some adversary with the right state of mind. So we're reprogramming those brain cells subconscious level to push yourself through this and not give up and hold that. So the more you can do that when you face a crisis opponent, you're more programmed to do that. Of course, there's very few people that are born with a warrior's mentality, you know. They're born just genetically, have it naturally, and they don't have to train. Then you have people in a gray area, and some of them can be trained, and a lot of them can't.
Right.
Because so much previous programming subconsciously to break those cycles, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So now you're in the military and you have your martial arts behind you. What part and exactly tell me what your first year looked like. And you went to the Army. Is that where you went?
Okay. Special Forces. Yeah.
Now, did you go directly into Special Forces or did you have to go like through some sort of a pathway to get
there? Yeah. Well, first, you have to sign up for it, and you go to basic training, AIT is different, all different now, you know, but in the 1800s it was different, you know.
I would imagine so.
There you go, eight weeks of basic training, and then I went to this AIT advanced leadership preparation training for a month, so they made me like an acting sergeant. So when I went to advanced infantry training, I was acting platoon sergeant, acting, you know.
Yeah.
So it was great experience. I was in control like 30, 40 guys, you know. So you really had to step up the plate and be an example to these guys and face yourself first so you could be example and push them.
Yeah.
But then after advanced infantry training, most people go directly right to Vietnam, right from there. And I heard most of that company I was involved in, a lot of them got killed, you know, because it was just basic infantry, you know, one of the dangerous things. But then from there, I went to Airborne. It was a jump school, Fort Benning. And you go there for 3 week jump school and got trained. And then I took this proficiency vocationary test to see if I had the aptitude for special training. I mean, for special forces. And they said I did. So then from there, Special Forces training school is in three different phases too. It's different now, but you go through a 6 week survival phase, and then you go through your specialty phase, which mine was light and heavy weapon. Then you go through the 12-man A team. Then they put a team together and you actually work out in the jungles as a 12-man A team with with your different specialties, and like it would be in a real situation.
Right. So you basically, what you're doing at some point is you're practicing like you're doing the real thing.
Yes. And then, see, I had an opportunity when I was a brag after that. There's so many excellent elite militaries, your Ranger School, Pathfinder School, Recondo School, Snipers, they have all these schools. So Mountaineering School, Cold Weather Survival School. You know, I went to as many as I could. That's just more training, you know, took advantage of that. Yeah.
So how many years of all that training did you get before you were like out there, you know, like Rambo?
Over a year and a half.
Yeah, I mean, I find that really amazing to, I would think that it would take a hell of a lot longer than that to be that trained up to be able to go face some of the circumstances that you end up having to face, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, like, when you really face a combat situation, I had a friend, Steve Jamgosian, and I, and he, when we first got there, like South America, when a detail, I mean, you're thinking, you're trying to be so aware every step you take, you're going to step on a tripwire, a mine, this and that, and, or get shot or something. I mean, you're just exhausted after 2-3 days. You can't do it because you're so too conscious, too aware. So you have to just surrender to that. Hey, if I'm going to get killed, I'm going to get killed. It's destiny, but I'm going to take as many out as I can and do the best I can and survive. Yeah. Yeah. You surrender to that pain, you surrender to that suffering, and you become one with it, and then let that go. And that kind of helps protect you in a way to be more harmonious with the situation.
Well, and the thing about that is that's completely counterintuitive, and you can't possibly, I mean, can you train for that, or do you actually have to be now out in the real world and say, I mean, this is that next step where you got to face yourself? Because how can you be in that environment before you go into the real environment? Let's just call it that. You're training.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a different, it's like practice in a ball game. I mean, it's got to be different. You got to learn it from that perspective, don't you? Just being there and having to face it, like jumping in the water instead of putting your toes
in. Yeah, there's a point you just got to jump in and face it, you know? Yeah. And for example, I mean, like if you get caught in it's called an L ambush, you know, they got adversary on one side, like forms an L. And so you got a perfect kill zone right there, whoever you're sucking in. But the problem, the only escape that you have a chance is to attack the attack, which takes a lot of, you know, kudos and mental strength, but it has to be subconscious. You know, for example, some shooter comes in a nightclub, you know, and everybody runs away. But a real warrior would run right at the guy immediately and stop him. Maybe take a couple bullets, but he'd stop him before he killed too many people. Mm-hmm. You know, like Patton would say or something, you go in a direction where you hear the guns.
You know, it's amazing that a person can actually do that, Tom, because to be honest with you, I think I'm a pretty tough guy, but I don't think I could do that. I mean, maybe in that moment, maybe something would flip, you know?
Yeah.
But you telling me this story and you're running towards it, I'm running the hell out. I'm that guy, you know what I mean? You know, but yet, for example, at my studio, there's been a couple of times where there's been people around my the door, some, you know, early in the mornings. And you know what, Tom? I'm not somebody who's confrontational, but when I hear somebody around rattling my door, I have this big stick in my gym. Yeah. Do abs, Tom. I don't know where this shit comes from, but I go flying out the door with that stick, and I'm going after whoever's out there.
Oh yeah.
And yet, I can't imagine me doing that until I'm in that moment.
Yes, it's because that mental state you get into.
Can you actually teach that, or do you have to have that already as a part of your mental makeup?
You know, it depends what you have to work with. If you have an individual that has some inner strength and, you know, been through stuff like that, you can teach them more, you know. But it all depends. If you have somebody total opposite, that's very weak, insecure, mental issues and this stuff, it's very, they got to get through all that stuff first, you know.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, for example, like even with that Black Hawk Down, remember the movie in Somalia?
Yeah.
You know, there was two Delta Force guys who rushed right in to try to save those guys that with the helicopter went down. You know, and they both got killed, but they got the Medal of Honor, of course, you know, which, yeah. but they, And then how many guys, natural infantry guys, jumped on a hand grenade? You know, I think even there was a few of them recently in Iraq, and you know, and they had to go to surgery for years and everything, and blown up. And so, but they instantly, their feeling was just to jump on that grenade with their helmet and protect everybody else.
Amazing.
And if you would have thought about it, probably wouldn't have done it. You know.
Yeah, that's more of a, almost like a reaction.
Yes.
Because that's kind of how the feeling. And again, I'm not comparing my situation running after somebody, you know, that's rattling my doors. I'm not trying to compare that to like what you've seen, but it kind of feels that way. And there's something I've always been amazed. Like, I don't know where that comes from, but I can't stand it. I can't stand not knowing who the hell's out there. And I'm going after it. And especially at my age now, I probably shouldn't be doing that shit, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't think about that until I come back in. I go, you know, what am I doing?
What the hell? How stupid am I? Know. But, you know, but see, Leo, the way you trained your whole life was to face yourself, to push yourself and weight training. And, you know, that resistance, that burn, that pain you've gone through, that's like an opponent, you know?
Yeah,
but seriously, so your mind is programmed that way when you have that conflict, you face it, you push it. You know, I mean, you know, I've been to a lot of gyms and trained and saw a lot of top bodybuilders and stuff, but what impressed me more than anything, when you and Tom Platz would train together, when I saw you guys, I go, Jesus Christ, that is a different world, the veteran, where you guys took yourself, you know?
Yeah, it was like war. It felt like war to me.
Yeah.
You know? I tell the story a lot of times. I said, you know, normally you're not really afraid to go work out, but when I was training with him, there was a fear factor there, but I think I needed that in order to get into the fight or flight autonomic nervous system to be able to handle that shit.
I know.
I guess in a way it's kind of the same, right?
Yes, exactly. It's all relative, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like our subconscious mind doesn't really know the difference between a penny and $1 million in a way, you know.
Interesting, yeah.
Or like when we go to a movie, it doesn't know the difference if we visualize and have an imagery so intense and powerful, or if it's a real situation. Because look, when you go to movies, you really put yourself in that hero actor's mentality and mind, and you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark, going over the falls on a raft, where you know, it should be the audience is reacting to everything because they're feeling, experiencing that, you know.
Hey, let me ask you this, maybe you can tell me, because I think I either read this or heard this. Well, I had some strokes about 8 years ago, as you know, and when I did my rehab, I read something, I believe, that when you look into the mirror, and this is what you're talking about, and that when your body, it doesn't know the difference between the left hand or left arm and the right arm. Is that true or not? Is that your subconscious mind? Because when I did when I actually had my good side doing the exercise, it influenced my paralyzed side.
It
always worked. It always connected that and made that my other side better. Is that true?
Yes, but what connects it, because, you know, like left brain is in control of right side, by right brain, left brain, and left brain is more logic, rational, intellectual part of our side, you know, and right brain more intuitive, creative, emotional, you know, sensitive side. But then they connect together. Like they notice, like with Einstein, when they did autopsy in his brain, there were so many blood vessels that connected both right and left brain. So in unison, they really work together that way. Yeah. You know, so if you're stimulating one, it's still connecting to the other side.
Yeah, almost like a cross-training effect.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
like we talk about that in sports. Yeah. You know, when you have one side injured, you train the other side and you get a
cross-training
effect same way. Okay, interesting. Okay, so now you're in the – did you – the first time you got into a conflict was it from you parachuting into a place, or what did that first, you know, now you're in it's the real deal. What was that? Like, just like your first fight, I'm assuming you took a big step in the real world out there. What did that look like? If you can talk about all that.
Well, first, you know, I'm not saying you don't feel any fear at those times. I mean, you feel a lot of fear, you know, but you got to get past it, you know. At some point, you go through all the physical things, but it depends on your mentality, how you surrender to it, how you accept it, you know, how you face it. You know, when I used to do like a lot of that walking on red hot coals, but you know, most anybody can do that if they believe they can do it. But there is something that's protecting the body. There's still some tricks with it.
Yeah.
But then I had an instructor who's an engineer, a quantum physics guy, Eric Best, and he gave a great demonstration facing fear in securities. What he'd have a chair, and you're walking to that chair. And then some people, that's their fear. Mm-hmm. They walk around, they just ignore, or like it's not even there.
Yeah.
And then some people act real macho and just bump, kick it aside, but it's still stuck to them. They're still attached to it, you know?
Yeah.
And then some people get really frustrated. They sit in a chair and they try to analyze it and logically and all that stuff. But then when they get up, it's still stuck to their rear, mm-hmm. you know? But there's a way you got to sit in that fear, that anxiety, whatever. You feel it, you experience it, and you let it go and become unattached to it, and you surrender to it, and you go to the other side, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of movies depicted that with Billy Jack stuff, facing some demon in a cave and all kinds of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a bit more. And then, you know, for example, what he would do, first you go to the fire where you're burning the wood down. You go back in a classroom and you write all the negative things that could happen to you if you walk this pit. You know, I burn my feet, be permanently injured, this, you know, a whole list of it. Mm-hmm. Then you go down, you throw that in a fire. Then you come back. Now, if I accomplish this, what are all the positive things that I can accomplish? Push myself, face myself, be more positive thinking, successful, you know, and you throw that in a fire too. You have to accept the positive as the negative.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people want to become successful, but they don't want to, you know, pay the price to do it, you know?
So when you're going through that process, is it important to think of the negative first and then with a positive outcome, or does that order matter? You know what I'm saying? Or do you go positive first? No, because you just told me the order, because you said first you're thinking what the negative is, but then it came second in order. Is that on purpose?
Yes, on purpose, because you want to get rid of unattached to the negative, so you have a void, emptiness to fill the positive. So like if you have a negative habit, you want to get rid of the negative habit or issue, and then you replace it with a positive habit.
Yeah.
So if you're going through something and I said, oh, I'm thinking this thing, I start doing push-ups or do something or some chi breathing or whatever, or meditate, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you say you surrender to the pain or to the fear. I had a similar, and again, nothing compares to what you've gone through.
No.
But here's what happened with me. At one time, I used to smoke cigarettes. I got heavily addicted to cigarette smoking, you know?
Yeah.
And so it came to that day where I thought, you know, I got to quit. I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
But I thought, like a lot of people, I can quit whenever the hell I want. Mm-hmm. Of course, I couldn't. I was so addicted. You know, I'd throw them away, and then, you know, 5 days later, I'd be hunting for the cigarettes, or, you know, wherever I have to go buy a new pack.
Yeah.
No matter how much will that I applied to quitting smoking cigarettes, I could never do it for any length of time. And I cannot tell you how I quit forever. I'll never forget that. I gave into it. I said, okay.
Yeah.
I know that I'm severely addicted, and I know that I want to give this up at some point in my life.
Yeah.
The minute I said that, Tom, I mean, it wasn't like immediately that it happened, but at some point, not too long after that, I gave a shit up.
And yeah.
It was amazing. It was almost like I gave into it instead of using all this willpower.
Right. Exactly.
That's pretty interesting, I think.
It is.
It's so counterintuitive. Where'd you go?
It is. Because the other way, you're using your conscious mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, like that old saying, you know, it's like a big iceberg. Our conscious mind is the tip of the iceberg, and subconscious mind is, 10 times the mass below. And then another thing they say, like the ocean around it is the universe around it in a way.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So did you, you're going back to your first conflict. Were you parachuting into somewhere, or were
parachuting.
Yeah. Can you talk about that at all?
Yeah, you know, South America, parachuted in, and I went through like a halo school, too high altitude, low opening, skydiving school. So the whole team did. And so you can, these parawing chutes have like a 25, 30 mile an hour built-in speed. So depending on the wind, you can travel, you know, depending when you open 20,000, 17,000 feet, you can travel for miles, you know?
Yeah.
So you know, you drop in and then you do a rendezvous and you have to rendezvous with everybody because everybody's different places and stuff right. too. And yeah, you know, when you make that jump, you know, you're going in combat. This is it. Yeah. So you go through a lot of shit in your mind, a lot of negative stuff, every negative thing that will come up, but you have to just let it go. Like you said, surrender to it, get past it.
Yeah.
And just surrender, jump in.
So were you guys going in to do an extraction or were you going in? What was the mission of that?
We were doing more intelligence and recons. And if we were there, both sides, right and left side, would have to show themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. The negatives, generals, and diplomatic people would have to show. They knew we were there. They would have to pick right or left side. And we work with other intelligence, would pick them out, mm-hmm. you know. So we were, but, you know, there's a lot of controversy with that, the whole operation was with that.
Well, is the idea just to find out what's going on and you report that back to the higher-ups? Is that the whole point of that? Okay.
Yeah, what their strength was, you know, where they're located, all positions. And, you know, we didn't have all equipment like they do now with satellites back then. You had to do it physically, you know?
Yeah. So were you in the jungle the whole time?
Pretty much.
Okay. How long did that mission or that, you know,
bit last? A few months.
You were out there, huh?
Yeah.
No kidding. So when you were out there like that, did you have a base that you were going back to? Or were
always had a base. Okay. And we had indigenous military we're working with, and we were more like advisors.
You know? Okay.
Advisors to them, and had 6-man teams, 12-man teams, you know, that we go up for intelligence, information, and data.
Yeah. And then, so what would you say would be, that was your first jump or your first, about with the, in the real world, but what was the most frightening thing that you thought, or when you look back, that was the most intense or frightening thing that you actually faced
in your military career? Yeah, getting in an ambush, got caught in an ambush, ambush like that. And, you know, it's all automatic weapons and they open up. It's just like, but luckily me and my partner were not in all the kill zone. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we started hearing the fire, we took off and started running, you know, over the noise of the automatic fire to get as far away as possible.
Yeah.
And then your heart is just, boom, just adrenaline, everything, boy. Yeah. Amazing what you can do when you hear about women picking up cars. I mean, fuck.
Yeah. You know, well, you know, and I was going to say something to you, you know, even though as human beings, we don't really tap in necessarily into the potential of our mind, but there's times like what you're talking about that sometimes you actually can.
Yeah.
You know, you start realizing how much you can take where you never thought you could.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, I think in some cases, that's where we actually do tap in probably to the higher end of that potential. Would you agree with that?
Exactly. Totally. Totally. Yeah. You know,
how long did you stay in the military? You said 3 years?
3 years. 3 years.
Okay. So your military career is now over. Was it hard for you to leave that, or was it something that you were ready to come back home to?
It's very hard to leave. And I think I would have, but that was like end of Vietnam in 72. So they started breaking everybody up, the military special forces, sending them all over different places. And it was just they're pulling back on everything.
Yeah.
And I think if there's more action, I would have stayed in, you know, or, you know, Delta Force, I was really interested, didn't start to, our top anti-terrorist group to 1976. So I got out 73. Mm-hmm. But I think if I knew that was then, there was a chance I would have gone there. But then after, they transferred me to different places to, you know, break up special forces and all that stuff. And that's what kind of bored me a little bit. But I was approached by some mercenary captain, more in South America, since I was there, that wanted to sign me up. But he wanted to sign me for, it would have been great pay, but wanted to sign me up for 6 years. And I considered it, but said, oh my God, I'll never make 6 years, you know?
Yeah.
That's too long. That's staying in the fire too long.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a couple of years and stuff. So I passed on that. But then, you know, when you get out, you still have that adrenaline, that adventurous gene in you from doing all that stuff, you know?
Yeah. And you know, something I know, because I was at my studio, there was a time where I wanted to help veterans that came back from war, to transition back into, I guess, what you call civilian life.
Right.
And so was that a hard thing for you to do? And how long did it take
you?
How long did that take you?
I'm still trying to do it.
Really? No. Is it like an ongoing process?
Yeah, because, you know, from then I try to construct my life, you know, from what I love, you know, for like bodyguarding and karate and, you know, working films, at least the fantasy part too, which I did a lot, as you know. Yeah. So yeah, it's very hard because even I went back to go back to college and I was so bored with all the subjects, biology, PE, this and that, nothing interests me. So I went to my teacher and I said to Mr. Hirschman, I said, "Mr. Hirschman, I'm bored all those topics. What should I do? What should I take?" He goes, "You know what? Right now, you made your mind up. Just commit, get PE, get a degree, anything. Just push yourself, go through it, just get the degree, and then something will happen." So it's so funny, after he told me that, within a week, I found out the college had a special major program where you could combine two different departments. Mm-hmm. So I combined the Asian studies with the history department, and I created Asian religions. Oh. So now I study Buddhism, Taoism, Zen, Confucian, Shintoism, and I can study the philosophy of a warrior and a samurai, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's almost, in a way, from my perspective, that's almost like you getting that kind of fix that you were in, you know, when you were in real combat, because you start getting into that deep mindset of that mental warrior, of that mental part, which you had already.
Yeah.
So how do you put that into use? I think you did a really good job in doing that.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that part, but, but, you know, doing that part now, that helps your mind understand the philosophy, all those ancient religions, where those warriors practice, the Budo, Bushido, understand where they were coming from, and you apply those techniques and internal concept to your own mind to really calm down, relax, be confident, secure with yourself, face yourself, you know.
Well, that's proof that it does start in the mind. You got to hold your mind.
Yes.
You were able to put yourself on a track that made you productive in civilian life. How do you like that for me shrinking you?
Oh, yeah.
I just analyzed the hell out of you right there.
Yes, you did.
I don't have a degree in psychology, but I have stayed at the Holiday Inn Express, and I just proved that to you right now.
Yeah. Didn't
I? So then how did you get into, I know you talked about bodyguarding, and I know you're doing that. How did you get into that? And what direction did bodyguard take you? Did bodyguard make you feel like you were kind of back into?
Yeah, it helped. You know, because bodyguarding is same time as a same type of concept principles as a military team.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, with team, you know, even like police is very close to that, and firemen, they're all military top level guys that way. Because that military concept principle is what works. That's how you win war, won battles, win fires, adversary, everything.
Right, right, yeah.
So when I got out, I just had a couple of clients. I used to do a lot of shiatsu, acupressure, and even got into acupuncture. So my private client business in Beverly Hills started out with that, you know. And and that was more like 80s, you know, early 80s. And then from there, it got networked over, you know, since I trained so much, then somebody said, "Well, I'm more interested. I want to get in shape and train." Yeah. I go, "Okay, I could do that." You know?
Yeah.
So it networked over to private client fitness training, you know, and then from there, somebody said, "Well, you know, I have a strained partner that's harassing me. I need a bodyguard or something." You know, I could do that. You know, So you just started. That's why you don't say you can't do it, because the experience is you just jump in that lake again.
There you go.
I can do it.
Yeah.
I can do it.
Yeah. So you're that background, and that instructor really had a lot of impact on your life. That
exactly. Because, you know, you use those military concepts
for
a principle for bodyguarding too.
Yeah.
So I already had that pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. So who then, go ahead. Finish what you're
saying. I was just going to say, and then that network over to films, you know, when I met Seagal I started training him first. A mutual friend of ours introduced us, and he said, "Yeah, I want to get in shape, get some more muscle." So I trained him to build him up a little bit. And then, so that was the first film, Above the Law, in Chicago, 86. And then from there, I did a few more. And then, you know, every film, I never advertised. It's just people said, "Hey, we need a stunt coordinator." And I learned how to do that, a fight coordinator, a military advisor. So it just networked over from there.
Adapt or die, baby. You modify on the fly. You just kept doing that throughout your career. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
I think people that are really successful end up doing that. You know, they figure,
yes.
I mean, because what are your choices? You either die and go but I think at the heart of it, you had passion and enthusiasm for what you were doing. And I think that's also very important.
Yeah, and you know, so that military say you adapt and overcome. Same
right.
thing.
I'll never forget that time, speaking of Seagal. And now I was hanging out with you a little bit down in LA. Mm-hmm. And sure as hell, we ended up going to Seagal's. I don't know where it was. He at a studio or something, but
I think it was an office, wasn't it?
Yeah, office or some shit. Something, and I remember, wow, that was pretty cool. You know, those were during the days where I had been training Costner, and so I had my feet wet with that. But it was really cool to meet that guy.
Yeah.
He seemed, I don't know, you know, he seemed to me like he was very much the same on in person as he was in the movies. He had a pretty cool cat, you know. He seemed pretty authentic to me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we all have different sides, and he has a different side too, and depends which one to experience. But that was a great day. He's got a very tough side and strict side, but he's got a, you know, very judgmental side.
Yeah.
But he's got a very humble side too, what I've experienced, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Who were some of the, I know he was pretty famous back in those days, but who else were you bodyguarding at that time? Or can you say?
Oh boy. Let's see. Work with Billy Zane, you know, and then Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Quite a bit with him. You know, when he had his house in Malibu, a lot of paparazzi, you know, some of the celebrities were worst enemy, worse than terrorists, you know. They try to get your wife or daughter, you know, compromised photos.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So they're like terrorists. But I was with him for like 12 years, you know, when he was over here. Then I worked at one film, trained him to be a military advisor, you know, special forces guy.
Yeah.
But a lot of them. Even I worked with Priscilla Presley for a little bit, you know. Yeah.
Is she still around?
Yeah, she's still around.
Is she in the California, L.A. area?
In Beverly Hills, Bel Air areas. She, you know, got remarried. I forgot. But, you know, when I worked with her, you know, she practiced karate.
Yeah. Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Norris and then... it was Ed Parker first and Norris and, you know, that clan back there.
Yeah.
And I introduced this, that iron ball training, you know.
Oh yeah. Okay.
The shot put to her and she loved it. And I mean, her reverse punches and, you know, she was probably late 40s, 50s then. It's tough. She's really good.
Didn't her dad also, wasn't he also into the
muscle? Yeah. He trained, with Ed Parker. He trained with Bill Wallace, even, I think, you know. Yeah,
because when he'd be doing some of his concerts, he'd do some of those. It looked like he was doing some of those moves.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if he actually really did train for that.
Yeah, no, he trained, but, you know, I think he was like a brown belt level.
Yeah.
It's a shame. Too bad he didn't able to train longer. Maybe, you know, it would have been a different destiny for him, too.
Yeah,
you know?
No kidding. Okay, so go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it's interesting, when he was in a service in Germany, he went to France, I heard, and we had our Shotokan Karate Dojo there, but the instructor was kind of a jerk a little bit, and didn't know who he was, and just was very rude to Elvis, else he may have started with us, or my teacher back then, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, so then... let's kind of now go to where you're at right now in your life. You're an old, like me, you're an old master now. You know, I don't know about you, but the way I'm staying relative, or at least I've fooled myself in my own little brain.
Yeah.
Because I still love the industry that I'm in. And I get the same feeling from you. You live and breathe this stuff. And I still do too at the age of 65.
Yeah.
And I ask myself, occasionally I'll ask myself some questions, you know, how do I stay relative? Because one of the things I've learned and followed in my life and make it a point is that whatever I do, there has to be passion there, enthusiasm and passion for what I want to do. Otherwise, it's an exercise in futility as far as I'm concerned.
That's right.
So, you know, for me, it's now passing on the information that I've learned over the years. I certainly don't want to get, I still train every day, but I'm just an old guy having a good time in the gym. And it keeps me alive. It's part of my training. I have to do it. You know, because I love it. So what is Tom Uzzell up to these days, and what do you do now in your life to stay motivated and passionate?
Well, first, you know, I still train as much as I can. You know, a little bit different than the old days. The old days was long and grueling. Now it's just short to the point with the right state of mind and state body, you know.
Yeah.
And being more efficient and economical. And I still like you, enjoy training different people. I've worked with a couple of UFC guys before, and, you know, I'm still open to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But even the bodyguarding has changed a little bit. I'm trying to work more on a bigger level of projects, like training a whole team.
Uh-huh.
For, you know, even got to think what one of the princes of Syria, you know, mm-hmm. and most of the American guys are going to be bodyguards, and he wants to do some real positive things. So maybe, you know, got a chance to train them. And then there's some other friends of mine have contact with a lot of doctors that have cures for different things to help protect them, you know.
Right.
And, you know, so more the bigger strategy overall from the top, yeah. from all the experience I've learned, you know, and trying to attach myself to more projects now and different people, partners, where you don't have to just hit the beat out there, you know. Yeah. And I like to do like you. You're an excellent speaker too, about with all your background experience, love speaking engagements, so you can pass on a lot of knowledge to people, businesses, companies, and tailor it to what their needs are, you know.
Yeah, I really like that. That really gets me, that gets me all fired up, you know. When I walk away from one of those talks or seminars, it just types into that sweet spot, you know, that it makes you feel good, doesn't it?
That core of, that you focused on your whole life, you know?
Yeah, which is cool. You know what, Tom? I'm sure you'll agree. I feel very lucky at this stage of the game. You know, I mean, 65 it's getting up there, but I still don't feel like I'm 65. But what I'm more thankful for now than ever is that I get to get up still at this age after being in the business for 38 plus years, and I still have that buzz in the basement.
Yeah.
And I look forward to getting up the next day to go do that, you know.
Yes.
And I really, you start appreciating that stuff when you get up there and you're a little bit older, you know. You do realize that the youth is wasted on the young, because I pissed a lot of it away, like the rest of us did when you're young.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think it's just part of growing up and older, you know.
Exactly.
So I think you and I are both we're both lucky that way, and I know that with you, because I've known you forever, and you know, we've done quite a few things together.
Yes,
you know. So
I know.
Anyway, listen, we're gonna wrap this baby up, and I really was looking forward to doing this, because I knew that once we started talking, it's kind of like old buddies, you know. Every time we get together, whether it be on a camera or together, it feels like we are going back home, and it's always entertaining for me.
Yes,
and I always learn from you. I think you're really. Interesting person, you know. And
no, thank you.
Anyway, listen, are you if you want to promote anything that you're doing currently, I mean, this is a good time to do on the podcast, so maybe people can find you somewhere, what you're doing.
Yeah, well,
what do you got?
I have a website. It's www.tomuzzello.com with two M's, and you know, everybody can get a hold of me that way.
Yeah,
very easily for whatever bodyguarding advisory stuff, training, whatever, films, anything, you know.
Yeah.
And that's all. And then, you know, like you've done a few books, and you know, all the videos and everything, everything's on there. Got a lot of instructional stuff.
Nice.
But anything I can do more to help in any way, any person, company, place, situation, like yourself,
good,
more than open to it.
Beautiful. Okay, listen, so here's what I'm going to challenge you. I know we're both competitive still at the heart. Okay, so here's what I'm going to challenge you to. I'm going to challenge you to a 40-yard dash the next time I see you. Is that too far for us to run?
Well, how far?
40 yards. Is that too far to run?
For furlongs?
40 yards.
Yards.
40-yard dash. I want to challenge you to a 40-yard dash. You think that's dangerous or what? I think it's, like, really dangerous.
Yeah, but we could both die from that. But
I'm just going to jump in. What the fuck? I mean, I'm just going to use your philosophy.
Sure, jump in the lake.
What, are you afraid now to jump in the lake?
Let's go. I could go 39.
Hey, you know something? I got to tell you something. I have a client at my gym, okay, female.
Yeah.
And very, very competitive. She's very competitive, even though she says she's not. And one day, this has been quite a few years ago, I was, you know, I was in my 40s already, maybe early 50s. And I said, you know what? you think you're a tough chick, huh? Tough cat. Let's go run a 40-yard dash.
Yeah.
She went out there, and I went out there, and I ran a 40-yard dash. I pulled a fucking hamstring muscle. I never did that again.
I know. I got to tell you one quick story.
Yeah.
We got time?
Yeah.
Okay, I got a good friend of mine. I think I mentioned him to you. His name is Ken Osborne.
Yeah.
He's trained like 60 years. He got his black belt originally with Chuck Norris, then he came over with us and stuff. And he's, talk about a true warrior. I could always, when I did all these radical long distance practices, 10,000 punches, 10,000 kicks, whatever, I could always talk him into doing it with me. Not all of them, but, you know, I could talk. I go, you know, Ken, I've been thinking. He's going, God damn it. You know, what do you think of what? Well, I was thinking about doing some kicks, you know. Why? Well, just to push yourself a little bit. He goes, well, all right, how many? Just, you know, not many, like 10,000, you know. What?
10,000? Just 10,000?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
But, you know, like you guys and the buddies in the gym and stuff are always rousing each other. So,
yeah.
Years ago, I was down here and I got frostbite really bad in my toe from climbing Whitney in the winter, the previous winter. And it still was very sensitive. So on his 40th, he's like 79 now. But on his 40th birthday, he goes, Tom, I want to run 40 miles on my birthday. I want you to do it with me.
Shit.
So I said, okay, but I already moved down south. I was living up with him in Northern California. And I go, look at Ken, I'll still do it. I'll still do it. I don't mind, you know. You go, you do it up there, and I'll do it down here the same day, right? Yeah. And I had a couple of pit bulls, and I couldn't run for like a few weeks because of my frostbite. I'm thinking, how in the hell am I going to do this? So I tried to swim. I tried to do everything, you know, keep in shape.
Yeah.
And best I could, you know. So, okay, the day comes up, and I ran it with two pit bulls on top, which makes it five times harder because they drag the shit out of you. You use all my ropes to hold back, and then until they burn out, you know.
Yeah.
And I used to run them every day when I was in good shape at 10 miles, you know.
Yeah.
And they loved that. So Ken calls me up. He's so excited. He said, oh, Tom, God, I did. It was great. But I pulled my hamstring. I did this. And I had a couple of brown belts do it. He goes, oh, by the way, did you also do it? I said, yeah, I did it. I played it down. I just rammed it up. As you know. He goes, yeah. I go, but, Ken, you know, I have to be honest with you, you know, because of my close friend. You know, when I got to 40, I felt so good. I had so much extra energy. I felt like a sissy if I stopped there. So I went a little bit farther. He goes, you son of a bitch. He goes, okay, how's your go? How far? I go, well, I stopped at 50 because I don't want to make you feel bad.
You're not competitive, are you? Not at all. Okay, so I'm going to, now that I'm rethinking this, my logical mind has kicked in now. Okay, so the next time I see you, I think what we'll do is we'll walk 40 yards and see who wins that one.
All right? Okay. Forget maybe that. Maybe we can go 41.
Or 41, whatever. Okay. Anyway, hey, listen, man, I really appreciate you coming on the show today. And let's do this again, you know, if for no other reason to lie to each other.
Yes.
Okay?
And don't forget with that old acronym, FEAR, false evidence appearing real. Right.
Ooh, beautiful. I never heard that before.
Yeah, that's a neat one.
I knew at some point you were going to teach me something new. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
I'll talk to you next time.
It's a real honor, buddy.
Okay, man. Take care.
Thank you, man. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.